Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
So on the 4th of July, we celebrate our nation's independence, and we thought a lot about the rights that we have. Well, let's talk about the summertime and, what you can do with carrying your firearms here on Bulldog Live.
Well, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
That's Steve Voss with Come and Take It, as we use that for our introduction every week for Second Amendment Tuesdays right here on Bulldog Live. 1-866-823-1077 is where you can call in and ask your question of attorney Penny Dean, which is brought to you today by Riley's Sports Shop in Hooksett. Hi, Penny.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Isn't it a beautiful day?
It is. It really is. I heard the sound of freedom all weekend long.
That's exactly what that is, the sound of freedom.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, it's another beautiful day today. Some people going back home, but others still get to enjoy an extended vacation, too.
They do?
Well, I said some.
Okay. The ones that extended vacation. And actually, while they're on vacation, we have to talk about what I consider a very interesting phenomena in the summer. In the summer, everybody wears lighter clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's people, a lot of people, who have what they call winter carry guns and summer carry guns.
Yes.
You know, because it only makes sense, you know, tactically, that in the winter, people are going to be wearing thicker, heavier clothes. So if you're forced to defend yourself, most people are going to have coats or other objects on them, which means the projectile or the bullet will have further to travel, you know, through clothing and other objects to be able to defend yourself and to hit your target, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, most people are going to be wearing T-shirts and shorts and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you always have to think about, okay, what are they wearing? You know, what are they wearing? And the other thing is what's called the concealability factor. You know, you can take a full-size 1911 and easily conceal it in the winter under a sweater and wool jackets and all that type of thing.
Yep.
Where in the summer, by golly, a T-shirt and, you know, shorts make it more difficult to conceal, let's say, a full-size 1911.
Sure.
I mean, you can do it. A lot of guys in the summer don't have belts on their shorts and all that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell people, they need to think about, and you need to make a conscious choice. Either way, there's two schools of thoughts. Number one, if you're going to carry openly, carry openly. And number two, if you're going to carry concealed, some people think you should keep it concealed because if you, quote-unquote, expose a concealed firearm, you occasionally have to be prepared for the person who wigs out and calls the police. There's a guy here with a gun.
Right.
You know, and sometimes it's like, what's he doing? Well, he's walking around. You know, and they're like, well, is he waving or threatening? No. Well, where's the gun? It's in his pants. You know, and so you get these people that, you know, really overreact. So you need to look and be prepared for that. And as long as you are, that's okay. The other thing you have to be prepared for is you're going to take 20 minutes extra maybe on your day in case the police respond to go through what I call all the rigmarole.
Mm-hmm.
Or more. That's number one. Number two, if you choose to carry openly, which it's fine, just be prepared for a few stares or everything.
Yep.
But here's what's most, there's a couple things that are most important to me is number one, people have to remember in New Hampshire, if you're going to carry openly and if you don't have a license to carry concealed, that means you can't in any way obscure the firearm with clothing or whatever. But more importantly, you can't get in your car and drive from point A to point B. Because a lot of people don't understand, even though New Hampshire open carry is perfectly legal, that and you can walk down the street, you can walk from point A to point B, you can be everywhere that's lawful to carry a concealed handgun, but you cannot get in your car and drive with an open firearm if you don't have a license to carry.
Now, this is important to note because I hear so many people say, well, gee, if I just keep the loaded handgun right on the passenger seat out in the open where they can see it, I'm fine.
That's exactly right. And tons of people get arrested and charged because they don't know the law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, conversely, if you have a license to carry a concealed firearm, you can carry it openly in your vehicle or wherever you want to.
Yep.
And people just have to be aware of that. And then there's something else that people don't talk about as much as they used to. And there's two tactical schools of thought. Number one is if you're carrying openly, some people think, well, you're going to deter crime. Okay, and that's a good school of thought because the general scumbums are going to say, you know what, I'm going to pick easier pickings.
Mm-hmm.
But the other school of thought on that is if you're carrying openly and serious bad guys come in a place, okay, prepared and ready to really do battle, you're going to be the first person they go after.
Yeah, that's my theory.
Yeah. They're going to say, okay, there's the only guy here that they think can stop us. We're going to take care of that one first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have to decide, and I always tell people, you need to think about all these things in advance. The other thing you have to think about, if you hang out with people or your children, is you have to educate your spouse, your children, and your friends about what it means to carry concealed and what it means to hang out with someone carrying concealed. Because what you don't want to have happen is to be shopping in the mall with your best friend when something crazy goes down. And you should be able to protect yourself and ones around. And the only thing you can think about is, where's my friend? Where's my friend? Where'd they take off to? Are they okay? You know, you have to talk with and discuss with them a plan in advance of how we're going to handle things and what we're going to do in certain scenarios.
Hmm.
And there are people who think, oh, my God, that's crazy. And the answer is, no, it's not. It's no different than responsible parents have fire drills with their children in their house. And they say, look, if we have a fire, if you're here, you go here. If you're here, you go here. We all meet at this point to make sure everybody's out of the house safely. Because you don't want people doing the run around the house looking for everybody thing.
Right.
So you all meet at a designated spot and say, okay, you know, we're going to count noses, make sure everybody's out okay. And so it's really no different, and you also train your kids, look, if you're in the kitchen, you'd go out this window if there's a fire. You know, if you're here, you'd go out this window type thing. And so really, you need to have the same discussion with your spouse, your children, your friends, if you're out in public and forced to defend yourself, you know, or forced to draw a firearm. What are you going to do, and what do you expect them to do? You know, what do you expect them to run away? Do you expect them to stand behind you? Do you expect them to be the one that calls 911?
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect them to report to you? And if so, some of the examples we can take from the police is they use one-word warnings because, A, people need to process things quickly, and, B, you don't want extraneous stuff. Like, you don't hear, over to the left, there's a guy with a gun. You hear, gun, you
okay.
know? And so you hear clear when they clear a room. You hear generally one-word communications that you've all agreed on in advance what those mean. And so you really need to have this communication with your family and friends as to what words mean what. For example, threat left. If the person is standing behind you, you know, my theory with my friends is we stand back to back because there's the pressure of their back against mine. I know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I can have eyes in the back of my head. And thirdly, you have that really extra set of knowing where they are and not worrying. Now, there's exceptions to every scenario, but the thought is that you want to have a prearranged plan so that you're not wasting precious time running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
In other words, that and the larger thing is you don't want to have them inadvertently run in front of your muzzle, because a lot of people don't understand there are certain scenarios where they said, well, they shot the person in the back. And in some cases, both with police and defenders, they didn't shoot the person in the back at all. What happens is that a human being can twist and turn their body before you, who are pulling the trigger, have a chance to react and quit.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you are starting to defensively shoot someone who's attacking you. And that person at the same point starts running away. You're going to have several shots off before your mind can process, okay, they've turned and they're running away or they're moving or some other thing has happened. And that's what's caused a lot of both civilian and police over the years problems, because not all police shootings were in the back. Not all civilian shootings were in the back. Even
yep.
though, you know, even though technically the projectile, the bullet, if you will, impacted the back of their body, that isn't where the shooter shot, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. As somebody who followed somebody who was brought up on first-degree murder for a self-defense case, and the guy was hit in the back because as they were shooting, they were unloading because this guy kept coming towards them. While as they shot him, his body spun around, and, you know, they're still firing. They're saying, "I want this bastard to stop." And then, you know, he spins around, and next thing you know, they got him in the back, and the prosecutor gets a grand jury indictment for first-degree murder.
And that's exactly it, and likely what happened, because anyone who knows that good shooters can get 4 to 6 to 8 shots off in less than a second, and it takes your body some time to process. You're shooting. The projectiles have left, you know, in other words, you're pulling the trigger, and the guy's turning. You cannot possibly react in time to stop that trigger pull. It doesn't work that way. You know, the bottom line is they're turning quicker than you're shooting, if you will, or than you're pressing triggers. And so those are things to think about as well. You know, when you talk about carrying a firearm in public and making that choice, is are you going to be able to enunciate all those things? And that goes back to my warning and admonition to people is to never, ever, ever make a statement to the police directly after a shooting other than to, number one, get an attorney, and number two, you know, say I was attacked, I was defending myself. But I think what's noteworthy is most police department unions don't require police officers to make shootings or make statements until 24 hours after a shooting.
Really?
Yeah. So if they're so highly trained and so expert in the field and so used to shooting, why in the world would you make a civilian who supposedly, according to police, is not well trained, who's not expected to be in a shooting, why would you make them make a statement immediately?
All right, 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live. Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean, brought to you by Riley Sports Shop in Hooksett. They are located on the DW Highway, 1575 Hooksett Road, if you're typing it into your GPS. 485-5000 is their phone number, and you can go check it out. They've got a great selection in stock. Oh, boy, I'll tell you about my visit there this week. But anyway, we do have somebody who wants to join the conversation, Penny.
Okay.
It's Kevin from Concord. You're on Bulldog Live along with Penny Dean.
Good morning, Attorney Penny Dean. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, I was on the show before with you once before. I still don't understand. Did the House or the Senate pass the law for the Kimberly Cates thing, I think that you're talking about there, the home invasion thing, did that pass through?
To my understanding, it passed, and I thought the governor signed it last
week. He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you saying? Are you saying, I'm a little confused on what you were talking about. I'm still against police officers shooting at people. It's okay for them to shoot. It's okay for them to shoot somebody, but they don't go to jail. But if I went out and shot somebody, I'd be in prison.
I think there's absolutely a double standard, and I'm not saying that double standard is okay. As a matter of fact, I am offended every day by the double standard.
I'm offended by our law enforcement. But every day I read in the news, like in Hillsborough, or just up in Grafton there, you know, somebody shot somebody and he's going to do time and you know, it's okay for like a city police officer to go out and shoot somebody. So, yes, I understand they're going to defend themselves, but the law should be applied to police officers as well as anybody else in the state of New Hampshire. That's how I feel.
Oh, you're 100% right. I think my point was that regarding perception, reaction time in shooting situations, there's been a lot of cases over the years whereby both citizens and police, they've said, well, they shot this person in the back. And not that there isn't legitimate cases where both the police and both citizens have shot individuals in the back.
Mm-hmm.
My point was to make everyone aware of the fact just because someone, quote-unquote, shoots someone in the back, or rather they were struck in the back, doesn't mean that they were shot in the back.
Okay.
And yeah, here's actually the difference is that if you are shooting a person who's coming head-on to you and you're defending yourself against the threat,
right,
you are deliberately, you would admit under oath, I was absolutely trying to shoot him. He was attacking me. I was shooting him. You know, I was defending myself. But what you would say is if they ceased the attack and you were still pulling the trigger, you're going to say, look, I didn't mean to shoot him in the back, and I don't know how that happened.
Right, and I'd get time for that. I'd get thrown in jail for that.
Oh, absolutely. There is a different standard. nursing home, I have a case right now that if anybody else's store had been broken into and people had come in and taken things, they would have had the police there so quick it had made your head spin. They would have arrested people like crazy. They would have charged them with robbery. You know, I could give you a whole list of things.
Yes.
And yet, because individuals, you know, because it's being treated differently, I think.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Attorney, and I hope you are working on this law, and I hope you can do something in the State House to try to bring this to an end. You know, we really do. We really need to bring this down to an end. People need to wake up, you know.
Absolutely, no, and absolutely, civilians should be treated the same as everyone else, and you're absolutely right that I think it's important to know, though, like I said, in shootings, you treat, like you said, civilians and police differently, and quite frankly, it's inequitable and it's not right.
I see it all the time in the newspaper, and it breaks my heart, you know, and I don't want to keep you, but anyway, you have a good day.
Thank you, Kevin.
Take care.
Yeah.
All right, 1-866-823-1077. Just about a minute remaining here, Penny, so quite a few things for people to think about for sure.
Absolutely, and I think the thing I would like to leave people with is Jeff Cooper, who had a lot of really good ideas, said you never carry a self-defense handgun whose first number doesn't begin with a 4, and preferably the second one's a 5, as in a 45.
Uh-huh.
And so for summer, sometimes people get lighter calibers, and I tell them that you got a little extra space for the big boys still. Just find a compact one. But to go down to really some of the really smaller calibers, I think it's dangerous.
Mm.
And I think people should remember and look at some of the studies and the shooting and, you know, do you want to, you know, I always joke a .22 is better than a quarter to call home, but not much.
Okay.
And so I always tell people to just consider the calibers they're choosing for summer.
Gotcha. Well, Penny, I can get Ray from Danbury in real quick. Ray,
okay.
Let's make it as quick as possible. How are you today? Ray from Danbury, you're on. How are you?
Good. Listen, one question for Penny. Why is it that we don't have a national law for carrying concealed weapons instead of by state?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, H.R. 822, which is a federal bill has not passed, but the other thing that you have to think about is, do you want California standards imposed on you for licenses to carry?
No, but we have standards for driving a car. If I've got a license in Alaska, I can drive in Florida.
You absolutely can. And there is one of those things where it's a question between state rights and national rights, but so far, the pro-firearms groups obviously haven't had the juice to get through a national law.
Yeah.
And so that's been the reason so far. But there are talks when we had national law in the past, different bills put in, they've included a lot, way, way, way more onerous restrictions than New Hampshire residents currently have. And so you always have to look at, you know, what do you want out of this? Are you willing to give up, you know, a whole bunch of the freedoms that we have here?
You know, I don't know enough about it, obviously, like yourself, but for example, we usually go to Bermuda on vacation, and this year we're just going to go to Cape Cod. And I looked up the laws and talked to a couple of people, and it's going to cost me $100 for a license for 1 year to carry a concealed weapon in Massachusetts.
But it may take you 6 months to apply for it.
And you have to go for a personal interview every year. I pay $100 a year in Massachusetts, okay?
Yes.
And I understand. I have licenses in many states, and I pay a decent amount of money. But Massachusetts is the most onerous. $100 a year, you apply months in advance, and you go for a personal interview each year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, with that, Ray,
I'm sorry?
I've got to run, Ray. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
All right, call in again next week if you would. All right, well, Penny, got to go. Thank you very much. Thank you to Riley's Sports Shop in Hooksett for supporting this segment here on Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Yeah. All right, and Riley's, boy, oh, boy, when I say they have a selection in stock, boy, do they ever. Take a look around, and one thing when I was in there a few days ago, they've got all kinds of used firearms as well. Now, if you're looking for a deal, some can be had right there at Riley Sports Shop. 1575 Hooksett Road. That is the Daniel Webster Highway in Hooksett. You can give them a call at 485-5000 or visit them online at rileysguns.com.